Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon and Wrestle-On. Today we're going to be talking about the sixth serial of the fourth season of Doctor Who, The Moon Base, which consists of four episodes, which aired from February 11th, 1967 to March 4th, 1967. March 4th is my birthday.
Yay!
Yay! I guess my pre-birthday because I wasn't born yet.
True facts!
And today with us we have a returning Cyberman...
Enthusiast?
Yeah, I guess. Enthusiast. Expert.
Could I really describe myself as a Cyberman expert? I don't know that that's the word. I think Cyberman enthusiast? Cyberman appreciator, which is a word I just coined. That's where that entire ramble is ending. It's done. I've stopped.
So far, he has been on every previous Cyberman episode we've done, which is a grand total of one.
I was going to say, that's a whole one episode.
It's Ben Patton, you guys.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back, and it's nice to be welcomed for once. I don't think I was welcome last time.
We just have a problem with Ben's.
Which brings me to a very interesting point. Before we start discussing the moon base, I can't appear on an episode, by the way, without rambling about some other nonsense gibberish. So as you guys are aware, and as some of your listeners may be aware, if they follow me on Twitter or Tumblr, I'm at Ben Padden on Twitter and benpadden.tumblr.com on Tumblr. Plug. I've been heavily researching Cubicle 7's Doctor Who tabletop RPG, which used to be called Adventures in Time and Space, and is now just called, very originally, Doctor Who Tabletop Game. They've released source books for each Doctor's era from the first Doctor right the way through to the 11th. And I thought, on a lark, just before we started to record, I would look at the first and second Doctor's books to find out, see what they think of your favourite companion, Ben Jackson.
Yay!
So, I was having a look at the stats. This first set of information is coming from the first Doctor sourcebook. So, this is obviously 10th Planet and prior. So, I'm going to give you these stats, and I just want to hear what you guys think. Because you guys are very vocal about Ben.
Some would say too vocal.
I don't have a horse in that race, so I'm just keen to find out what your response is. So, there are six main attributes, or attributes, however you want to say that particular word, in the Doctor Who RPG. Awareness, coordination, ingenuity, presence, resolve, and strength. In the first Doctor sourcebook, Ben has a 3 across the board out of a possible 6, except for strength, which is 4. For the second Doctor, those skills, coordination and ingenuity, both get bumped up to 4. But everything else is as is. But there are also skills, and I'll go through those skills with you now. There is the athletic skill. Ben has a 3. Convince. Ben has 2. Craft. Ben has 1. He has a 3 for fighting, a 2 for marksman, a 1 for medicine, 1 for science, 2 for subterfuge, 2 for survival, 1 for technology, 2 for transport, which the character sheet in the first Doctor sourcebook does go to great pains to mention that is specifically for sailing. But my favourite stat, this is my favourite stat, for knowledge, the first Doctor sourcebook gives Ben Jackson a 0. Straight up 0.
Ben just doesn't fucking know what's going on. And it's fucking official.
For the second Doctor sourcebook, some of those skills change. His athletics goes up from 3 to 4. His convince goes from 2 to 3. His craft goes up from 1 to 3. Fighting stays at 3. Marksman stays at 2. Medicine is at 1. Science gets bumped up to 2. For some reason, subterfuge goes up to 3. Survival goes up to 4. He's doubled his survival from 2 to 4. Technology stays at 1. Transport goes up to 3. No longer mentions the specificity of means of conveyance. So he's no longer sailing specific. His knowledge has gone up to 2 in the second Doctor era. Whether you agree with that is entirely up to you, but my personal feeling is maybe these character sheets are kind of on point. particularly in the first Doctor era. So, I mean, the character sheet for the second Doctor era takes into consideration stories that you guys haven't watched together yet. So maybe Ben earns those 2 points of knowledge.
Yeah, he learns. He grows.
But again, the character sheet gives descriptions. Like, there are traits, which are, like, simple traits, which don't have a skill level attributed to them. So in the first Doctor's source book, his traits include brave, charming, quick reflexes, tough, and something called run for your life, which I didn't look up what that was. But those traits in the second source book change almost the only one he has that carries over from one to the other is brave. The others are argumentative, attractive, not entirely convinced, by the book, brave, experienced, impulsive, and quick reflexes, and something called devotion, which is specifically states he's devoted to Polly.
I have a problem with charming as well.
Well, it only lists him as charming during the first Doctor era, so he lost his charm as he transitioned into the Troughton years.
That definitely makes sense with something that he does in this serial that made me go, for fuck's sake, really?
But yeah, I don't think this source book has a lot of love for Ben Jackson, and rightly so. Whoever, I don't know who did the second Doctor source book. I don't know whether they shared information. It does seem like the second Doctor source book is much kinder to Ben Jackson. So maybe he does improve. Maybe you guys have something to look forward to. Maybe he can turn it around.
Well, we've had a couple of instances where we're like, hey, you're not the absolute worst.
You did good, but then this episode happened.
I decided to look at Polly's character sheet in the second Doctor sourcebook, and one of her traits is unlucky, which does seem on point. She's not lucky.
She's saddled with another terrible companion.
Whom, if the expanded universe is to be believed, she does wind up marrying. That's about as unlucky as it can get. Anyway, now that we've alienated people who don't like tabletop RPGs.
And people who like Ben.
Well, which Ben? Because I think I'm great. And every time... No, this is a serious issue, because whenever I listen to the show while I'm, like, driving or, like, trying to fall asleep... Like, I've sometimes put a podcast on and I'll just listen to... And you guys are slagging off Ben, and you're really mean to him. And it's hard not to take that personally. Because of my name, I guess. Which is really... I mean, that's a me thing that I have to push through that. I have to separate myself from Ben Jackson. Because I'm not Ben Jackson. But it's really difficult when I hear the voices of two of my friends say, Ben is an idiot.
If it makes you feel better... We are talking about you.
Okay. I was going to say, we'll start saying Ben Jackson.
You don't have to do that on my account, but yes, please. Yes, please. 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 Please.
All right. Ben Jackson is an idiot. Ben Padden.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's all right.
And a moron. I'm comfortable with who I am.
Is there anything new going on in your life you want to...
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm learning the ins and outs of the Doctor Who tabletop RPG.
Let's talk about the moon base.
Yeah, so this story takes place on, I guess, some kind of moon base?
Somewhere.
Something like that.
Base, perhaps somewhere on the moon?
The moon base, the fun thing about the moon base is, again, there are episodes missing from this story, and the animation was done by, who did the animation for this one? A company called Planet 55 Studios, who, fun fact, no longer exist.
Is that why they just released The Underwater Menace on DVD? No animation for the missing episodes.
They just gave up because they keep killing companies, I think, right?
Sorry, my apologies. Planet 55 does still exist. This is me. These are the same guys who did The Tenth Planet, which is the animated reconstruction that we absolutely loved. Usually, a company does an animated reconstruction and then they collapse under the weight of their own decadence. Planet 55 still exists and actually partnered with Big Finish. They currently have a show in the works called Prisoner Zero, which they previewed at Gallifrey 1 this year. The other cool thing about Planet 55 and this particular reconstruction is they worked with Big Finish to do it. Nick Briggs and I think Gary Russell are listed as the exec producers of the animated reconstruction of the moon base.
And I really like the animation in this one too.
Yeah, it's about the same quality as the 10th Planet one too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, because it was the same people. Inexplicably, they're still here.
They do a good job of not just animating what needs to be animated. They also do a good job of making sure that it looks good and it's visually interesting and not just, here's people with their mouths moving. moving on.
Yeah.
I think the big problem with the animated reconstructions is, for me, a reconstruction would be, this is roughly what the episode would have looked like when it broadcast. And that's really difficult to do when we don't have the visual. We would need the episode to look at in order to say, yes, this is what it would have looked like. So any animated reconstruction is, by definition, another interpretation of that script and the surviving audio. So it's not really what would have been broadcast in the 60s, but it is an improvement over just listening to the episodes on a CD or having photo stills like we got or like you are going to get with the Web of Fear DVD, where it's just stills, or with some of the reconstructions that you guys have already seen that I refuse to watch. But yeah, Planet 55 still knocking around, still doing stuff with Big Finish worked on this one, and the animation is on point. It is great.
It was also fun, like, when you'd watch, like, the episode after it that does exist, and you'd be like, ah, that's where they based that animation scene on, because they did that a couple of times. I'd be like, ah, that's, like, the hand turning the knob. I was like, ah, they got that from that other scene.
And there's some great rotoscoping as well. Like, there are some points, particularly watching the first episode, where it reminded me, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the video game Another World.
Only from Port Center.
Hey! PortCenter.tv, where a lot of the animation, because it is a rotoscoped game, the animation is based on actual physical movement, kind of like Prince of Persia or Flashback. The animation's very fluid, but that's what it reminded me of, that particular type of rotoscoping. And you can see that they also, I don't want to say cut corners, because I think that's not a kind description, but they didn't rotoscope stuff that they didn't need to keep rotoscoping, like the helmets and the tubes leading to their breathing apparatus, unless there was a dramatic change in angle, so that allowed them to save time. It didn't stand out too much as well, so it was nice. I think the animation in the moon base, not quite as good as the 10th Planet, but it's in that ballpark, and I think these are probably two of my favorite animated recons.
There wasn't any, like, scene, like, the scene in the 10th Planet where the commander guy has the gun, and it's very intense. Like, there's no scene that, like, matches that sort of, like, blow-me-away kind of quality, but it's still really good. It's still solid.
Yeah, but I also wonder how much of that is due to the pacing of those of the particular episodes that have been reconstructed here. There was one point, and I'll get to it when we're discussing the actual narrative of the episode, which I think we should do right now.
Maybe. So the episode starts, and basically the Doctor's like, I can totally fly the TARDIS. That's how the last episode ended. He's like, I can totally fly it. I'll show you. And then proceeds to crash the TARDIS.
Woo! Because he wants to take them to Mars, right? I mean, that's where he's... Because he says at the start of this episode, oh, we're on Mars. That's kind of, hey, look, that's where I wanted to be. Mazel tov.
He got their ass to Mars. Yeah.
Yeah, get your ass to Mars.
But then they realize they are not on Mars. They're on the moon. Which I like that he's like, oh, we're on the moon. We didn't want to be on the moon. Let's go. And everyone has to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
This is the moon.
Can we go on the moon? We really want to go on the moon.
It's an uncharacteristic moment for the Doctor where he decides, let's not hang around somewhere where we're not supposed to be, which is not something that he's ever done before, nor will he ever do again. I mean, remember back in, you know, the first Dalek serial, he deliberately sabotages the TARDIS because he wants to stick around, and he's like, oopsie doodle, let's go. I love that. But I also feel like this is one of those, I don't think you could have done this moment in any point after the 70s when the show is being produced in colour. The entire, oh look, we're on Mars, isn't that great? Oh, well, no, we're on the moon. It's, I think, predicated on the fact that it was being filmed in black and white. Because immediately someone saying, we're on Mars, someone else would have gone, it's grey out there. It is not red. Mars is famously called the red planet. It's kind of baked into the name. So I feel, maybe we haven't made it. So I feel like this scene would not have worked in the Pertwee era or beyond.
Which is something that I honestly didn't even think about. I was just like, hey, you got close. You aimed for Mars. You're in the right solar system. Good job.
You missed by a couple of planets.
That's what happens every time he's sort of like, I'm going to go somewhere specific. He always misses it by like just a little bit. Not too bad.
Which I think is something that Ben kind of teases him about.
The other Ben. There's Ben Magnificent, which is me, and there's Ben the Disappointment, which is also me, and then there is Ben Jackson. So yeah, everyone's opinion is, hey, let's stick around, and the Doctor's like, oh, all right then. You're like, 5 minutes, come on, kids.
Which they all just sort of go, they're like, yeah, let's go, and head for the door. And the Doctor has to be like, whoa, There's no air.
Yeah, two things. Firstly, let's not explode and die in the oxygen-free environment of Earth's moon. And secondly, let's not asphyxiate and die on the oxygen-free environment of Earth's moon. That's one point I've said there two times, because I feel like you're not getting the fundamentals.
To be fair, every other planet or whatever that they've landed on, they just go right on
but
out.
No, they check.
They check
on occasion, they'll be like, yeah, oxygen levels are fine, let's go.
I don't think at any point before this have they ever landed anywhere that doesn't have oxygen, though. I think this is the first time they've landed somewhere.
So it's force of habit. The problem is they keep making assumptions, and you know what they say about assumptions? They make an ass out of you and Umption.
I have heard that.
Umption was my favorite companion.
Umption was a short-lived companion. I think Umption both made their first appearance and subsequently died in the gap between The Underwater Menace and this serial. I think that's an expanded universe thing now. So yeah, so everyone's like, let's go out. And the Doctor's like, whoa, maybe you guys need to breathe. So they put on the suits.
Which look amazing.
Awesome.
Oh yeah, they look fantastic.
I love them.
They were marvelous.
I think it's great that their suits look better than the suits that we'll get to see the moon base people have. As they have suits as well. Team TARDIS's suits look a little bit better than the moon base suits.
They're from an advanced society.
I also think it's disappointing that we don't see these suits in modern Doctor Who. Because imagine the waters of Mars. David Tennant's TARDIS materializes on the surface of Mars. The door opens and out he steps in this glorious 60s spacesuit.
It's so beautiful.
So yeah, they're on the moon. They start like, it's like, hey, the gravity is kind of wacky. And this is the part where I had to rewind it and watch it like, I think two or three times. Because one minute Jamie is there, and then he's not, and he's unconscious near a pod. Now, the TARDIS wiki says that, and I'm quoting here, Jamie overstretches himself and knocks himself out. I didn't see this happen, and I watched the scene at least twice. So did I blink and miss it, or is it just not conveyed very well for the viewer?
I knew what was happening. Tony totally missed it and was like, what? What happened?
Yeah, because, yeah, suddenly he was not okay.
I just assumed he jumped too far and then had a bad landing, is what I assumed. Like, he sort of just tumbled and knocked himself out.
No, I totally had the same problem of, like, what? What happened to Jamie?
I will say, I wish this existed so we could see them jumping around. That's the first sad blow.
I wonder if there are any surviving clips from this episode, because I have the Lost in Time box set, and if there are any clips from this episode, I'll have to sit and watch them.
I need to do that as well. We didn't watch any
clips. I will say that, like, watching this scene, I was like, they just newly acquired, like, a set of wires. Because they used them.
They used them in the Underwater Menace
as well. And I'm like, I'm sure that's what's happening right now. I'm like, hey, we've got these.
They use them for the fish people.
Yeah.
Which, like, the Underwater Menace DVD, the fish people are very prominently displayed on the front of the box, despite being in the serial for like all of 5 minutes.
Because they look cool.
I'm looking at the listing for Lost in Time, and the Lost in Time set includes episodes 2 and 4 of the moon base and the soundtracks for 1 and 3. So it's basically like the DVD set, but without the animation. To wit, it is dumb and unnecessary. Oh, well. There's no existing clips on the missing episodes. If there are, they weren't put on the DVD.
You guys keep talking.
Very quickly, Jamie falls? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, he falls and he's unconscious by a pod, and then a couple of other people in spacesuits come out, and they're like,
let's just take this. Found it, it's mine.
Dibs on the legs. So one guy picks him up by the legs, the other guy grabs him by the hands. In a beautifully rotoscoped bit of animation that looked really fluid and nice, because it was rotoscoped, and that's what rotoscoping looks like. The end. Thanks for listening. Thanks. Don't forget to listen next week when we talk about the rotoscoping in something else, in A Song of Ice and Fire. Thanks for listening to Rotoscope Podcast. This joke isn't landing. I'm going to stop talking. I'm sorry. I'm ruining your show. Guys, this is not good. I fudged up. I fudged up real bad.
Just let him keep going.
I want to see how long he'll go.
So the rotoscoping... these two weirdos carry Jamie into their ship. Now here, I felt like the suits in this scene looked a lot closer to what they had in the TARDIS. The suits that the other people are wearing visually resembles... I'm gonna shut up.
No, I feel you. But when we see him in live action, I feel like their little air bags on the back are smaller than the Team TARDIS's air bags. I was like, that's not enough air for anybody. I was worried.
You're gonna run out.
Well, it could be that fancy oxy-regeneration technology from Red Dwarf, where rather than have air canisters, they just have a machine that generates air, because it does that. Like gravity plating. Also, fun fact, they're jumping around on the surface of the moon. As soon as they're in the base, gravity seems to level out.
I assume there's like a lever for gravity. It. Yeah.
But I feel like it wouldn't need artificial gravity because it's not that there isn't gravity. It's just not Earth gravity. So why go to the trouble?
For the same reason I have air conditioning. I just want it to be a certain temperature.
I mean, that's fair. That is a fair response.
And plus they're doing, you know, very scientific work.
Can you set the
gravity
a little lower, please?
They don't want to just be like bouncing all over the place.
Sorry, I questioned the way gravity works on a science fiction series. What was I thinking?
Plus, I mean, their whole work is dealing with gravity.
So they've got the equipment.
Fair. You know what? That's on me and I I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to apologize for asking the important questions.
It led to an important discussion.
It did. So anyway, so they're inside the base and there are workers who are... They're just chilling out at consoles. I'll say chilling out. They're working on the consoles and nothing's really kind of explained as to what those consoles are. And then one of the workers is like, and falls, like, just, I thought he fell asleep, or he passed it. I genuinely thought he just passed out from overexhaustion, because there's no music cue, there's no, like, dramatic camera angle. He's just, one minute he's sitting there, and then the next minute he lulls back like he's just having a power nap.
Oh, and, I have a title for this episode, which is relevant to what's about to happen. This is episode 1, The Curse of the Black Nerves. Okay, continue.
That's the worst... That is awful. I would have called it Doctor Who the Animated Series, but that's not very original. The Animated Adventures of Doctors Who.
Number two.
Doctors Who through two. Team TARDIS, sans Jamie, who's already been carried in. Do they just kind of barge in? I literally watched this 2 hours ago, and it's already slipping.
But yeah, the guy that passes out, though, this is
how we figure out that he's not just sleeping, is he gets his weird...
He goes all, like, Dark Willow. Things.
Yeah, he gets that kind of... Weird. I'm just touching my face. You listeners can't hear this, but I'm just rubbing my face like Sinead O'Connor during the middle of a drug trip, or during the Nothing Compares to You video. Why do I even? Ben, calm down. Give it a minute. Breathe. It's okay. You don't have to be on all the time. Just enjoy yourself. You're talking with friends about your favorite TV show. Okay? Just allow yourself to enjoy this. So there's crap growing up all over his face.
I thought it was veins, but it turned out to be nerves, I guess.
Well, I don't have a doctorate or anything, but I'm pretty sure that the difference is negligible between veins and nerves.
Same difference, same thing.
It's the same basic
veins
thing.
Veins and nerves.
I think if you like do like some sort of surgery to fix like a vein problem, you can just transplant nerves and it's the same difference.
Right, exactly.
Same deal, Ally McBeal.
The veiny guy.
Is taken away.
The nervy guy is sent to the sick bay.
And then Team TARDIS arrives.
Yeah. Well, I think they're with somebody. They're like, hey, that person you just brought in, that's Jamie, and we need him. He belongs to us, and we want him back.
Yeah, we want him back, and then we'll go. And their response to that is basically no. The doctor asks basically what's going on, and they it's a weather control station. They use a gravity machine to control the weather, something called a gravitron, to control the weather. And literally, this speech is so boring that another worker collapses during the explanation. Does he also get the vein thing, or did I imagine that?
Yeah, okay. They all get nervy.
And the doctor's like, hey, I'm a doctor.
And he does this, and it's in the animation, he does this thing where he says that line, and then his face rests neutral for a while, and then just snaps to this delightfully smug little smile for just a few seconds, and it was the most beautiful. It's like this look on his face, like the doctor was so thrilled to be able to offer his look what I did, and it just looks hilarious. It just made me so happy.
They also animate him like being nervous with his fingers.
Yeah,
Oh, they were great with that. Yeah,
little finger things,
little things that they would throw in that like just help sell the scenes than just sort of standing there stock still while they go about their lines. It's nice.
The doctor is so pleased anytime he gets to do anything. Like, we had the last one where he got to wear a hat.
Yeah.
I was so happy he got to wear a hat. Now he's like, I'm going to be a doctor. Great. I'm just excited to be here.
He's super jazzed about the concept of headwear.
He loves hats and food.
I also wanted to point out, I was just watching the moon base. I wanted to see that smug little smile. And here it is. Oh, it makes me so happy. Ah, oh, when his face transitioned to that, it just made me so happy. It's magical.
I am loving Troughton so much.
There's a reason he's my favorite.
So anyway, We have a podcast happening.
Earth calls in.
They contact Space Control, who, as you may be able to infer from the name, control space.
All of it.
And they say, hey, we've got a few people kind of just passing out down here. No, doesn't someone say, hey, there's a hurricane heading for Hawaii. What's the dealio? And their reaction is, no, it's fine. Our guy just passed out from exhaustion.
We're on top of it. Don't worry.
We've got it. Don't worry.
And then their reaction to that was, do you though? I feel like maybe you don't. If we're having to call you and say, look, Hawaii's about to get a hurricane in the face. And they're like, no, we're good. It's fine.
And besides, who likes Hawaii anyway? It's fine.
Hawaii, Shamawai. So yeah, they say, yeah, there's a couple of people are sick, it's fine, don't worry about it. And Space Control reacts by saying, hey, maybe we quarantine you and no one enters or leaves. Because that's pretty problematic. Problematic in the sense of people are sick and maybe they'll die and we don't know what the cause is. That is problematic. One of the crew says, hey, so you know that chat you just had with Space Control? Someone was listening to that. And at no point does anyone go, how can you tell? They just kind of go, oh, okay, huh, that's weird. And they're near the base. Specifically, it's someone near the base.
The main guy in control of everything seems very easily distracted. He goes to kick out the doctor like 3 or 4 times, and he's always like, oh, wait, what? There's something else happening? All right, let's deal with that for a second. Not in like a dire way either, like, oh, there's stuff's going bad, we gotta fix it. It's always like, hey, tell me about that Gravitron. Oh, okay, so...
Do you feel like he's just really incompetent at his job, but he keeps getting transferred and promoted to other departments so that that department gets rid of him, and now somehow he's in charge of this moon base?
Yes. That's a beautiful... Yeah. He just failed upwards?
It's like some of the executives I knew at a large entertainment company I worked for several years previously. Polly goes to look at Jamie. Not to help, just, like, look at him. Just stand and leer ominously.
I think there's some, like...
Everybody likes Jamie. It's just like a... They treat him like a pet. Can we keep him? And then...
Oh, he's sick. Oh. Well, because they're thinking of him as this, like, what was it, 18th or 19th century Scottish idiot?
Yeah, and they don't, like, explain anything to him.
I get so frustrated. For Jamie's just like, what's that? And they're like, don't worry about it. And Jamie's like, okay. And I'm like, well, someone please explain anything to him. He doesn't know.
This is why I really don't think that we should have a, like, a Victorian companion or a Tudor-era companion on the modern series, because if you have to stop and explain what a phone is, what a car is to a companion, it breaks the flow of the show. For a companion, you want someone who is really contemporaneous with the show that you're watching, or is at least able to grasp basic concepts, which is why Ben doesn't work.
Which I feel like...
Ben Padden?
I feel like, yes. Jamie either, like, okay, this is a ship. It travels in time. Got it. Or he's just like, I don't understand it, but whatever, let's go.
They never seem to really land one way or the other. It kind of dithers between the two.
Either he just rolls with it, or he's like, that makes enough sense.
Okay. I think you can do decent stuff with, like, a out-of-time companion. Just tilk it up, you know? You can play that for comedy, I feel like.
I mean, Tilk is one person in a team of, like, 5 or 6. When you've got a doctor and a companion or 2 companions, that's as much as half of the recurring cast not knowing what a bus is. And I feel like that's fundamentally going to get in the way of the stuff. I'm really hoping that Bill, the new companion who was announced just a few weeks ago, I'm really hoping she's from the 80s.
I'm down for that.
I am too.
Fingers crossed. So yeah, so Polly's leering over Jamie, and Jamie's hallucinating. He keeps talking about the Phantom Piper, which is not a thing in Scottish lore. So there's no reason for him to be... He's invented this ghost bagpipe player. Like, I'm gonna Google Phantom Piper.
I think it is said that it's, like, specific to his family. So, like, his family invented its own ghost.
If you don't get down from there, you're gonna get visited by the Pied Piper of...
Ghosts. Okay, so the first result is home of Jane Espy, the Phantom Piper, a Celtic group from Fife. Okay. But yeah, the first entry after those is on the TARDIS wiki. It's the concept of the Phantom Piper. And the entry is literally, the Phantom Piper was the McCrimmon clan equivalent of the Grim Reaper. It was said to be a McCrimmon himself, and appeared right before a McCrimmon died. When on the moon base, Jamie mistook a Cyberman for the Phantom Piper. There's no factual information in any of this article, and there's no other entry for the Phantom Piper anywhere that isn't a Scottish country dance group.
But it's just in the family.
It's literally Kit Pedler, writer of the Moonbase, going, you know what, I'm going to invent some Scottish nonsense.
Jamie's so cute. I think.
Yeah, this is what the scene that kind of sold Tony on Jamie, because she enjoys any sort of character being cute while also being really sick and like needing help. Because Tony wants to take care of them.
So much about your relationship makes sense now.
Favorite scene in like, I forget which episode it is, but the one where Ian is sick is like the best episode of Doctor Who.
That was the Sensorites.
Oh, it was the Sensorites.
What does that say about you psychologically?
A great deal of things, probably.
Moving on. Moving on. Jamie's having these hallucinations of his own personal oddly Scottish Grim Reaper. I say oddly Scottish, he's Scottish. It's just odd that this character does not exist in the real world. So the Doctor sends Ben, who is obviously intelligent, knowing, wise and capable, back up to the control room so that someone can keep an eye on what the stuff that's happening in that area. My phone thinks I just said okay Google and activated voice commands. That's fun.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Shut up. I wasn't talking to you. So Ben gets sent up to be competent. Does he succeed?
A little bit. I don't think he actively messes anything up.
They go into like the like inventory place, right?
Yeah, he goes to work in the storeroom.
And there's a hole in a bag.
And someone accuses him of stealing food.
And does he basically just kick him out?
That's my memory of it from having watched it 4 hours ago.
Guy's name was Ralph.
Yeah, it was basically, hey, have you been stealing food? I've literally been here 7 minutes. Why are you accusing me? Ralph kicks him out, and then there's that kind of silver hand that attacks Ralph, electrocuting him.
That scene was really effective.
That's scary.
Yeah, like the animation there was really good too. Like
it worked. Oh yeah, they nailed it.
Because it just, that arm literally comes out of nowhere, and he's like, "Oh shit, I should have seen that coming. I did not."
But yeah, Ben comes back, and Ralph is gone, and he's kind of like, "That's weird."
Not even a body. So we go back to the sick bay where Polly sees the doctor fiddling around with like a bit of silver paper. And that's it. No. Dr. Evans wakes up. Was he in the sick bay? Was he sick?
I think there's like some scene earlier on where it's like, oh, everyone's sick, including the doctor. So that sucks.
And that's why the doctor's like, yeah.
Oh, no, I do remember that, because there's that moment of including the doctor. And for a second, because I wasn't really paying attention, I thought, oh, is the doctor already sick? Like 17 seconds into this episode? Did Patrick Troughton have a vacation booked or something? But no, it was a real... their actual doctor.
Yeah, he's in the sick bay with the thing everybody's sick with, the virus.
The veiny stuff. Or the nerves. It's nerves.
He wakes up, right?
He gets up, he screams something about a silver hand, and then he collapses dead. He wakes up just long enough to die.
And say, like, something vaguely helpful.
Well, it's not really helpful, because they'll see a silver hand. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, Indiana Jones doesn't need to be there. Neither does this sequence. He should just die. He should just die. Or say something useful. Or ask them to feed his cat or something.
So, Ben, meanwhile, is like, I should probably tell somebody that Ralph's gone. Hobson, that's the name of the guy who's in charge, right?
I think so, yeah.
So, he goes to him and is like, hey, this guy disappeared. And I think at the same time, the doctor comes and is telling him about the other doctor's death.
Yeah.
And Hobson's like, all right, well, I'm not going to tell anybody about it, though, because if there's like a virus and it's killing people, they'll just close everything down and we can't have that.
We can't have that perfectly reasonable safety precaution being taken out on our little base. Hobson sees Mr. Evans. He goes to check Mr. Evans' body and goes to the bed and the body's gone. Like, there's no Mr. Evans. Wait, no, I skipped a bit, didn't I?
Yeah. Because Polly's helping Jamie.
Yeah, Polly's helping Jamie drink water. He's like awake enough to drink some water.
And that seems cute.
And it is cute. But he sees something behind Polly.
And she turns to see it as it's walking through a door, disappearing through a door. And then she screams.
Because it's the 60s.
Also because it's the 60s. She's like, hey, I saw something. And everyone was like, no.
You didn't.
I don't think so.
Why is that such a common damn thing for this show?
Because it's the 60s. And women aren't real people.
Oh, you didn't see anything. You're just crazy.
I'll tell you, I don't want to spoil too much for you, but that happens a lot during the UNIT era, where the Doctor, as part of UNIT, because he's exiled to Earth, gets called to a place to work with UNIT and no one will listen to him. And the Doctor's constantly having arguments with stern, authoritative, old, bald English men about why something terrible is about to happen. And then they insist it doesn't happen. And then it invariably happens. So it's like every serial is a Roland Emmerich disaster movie where the Third Doctor is the guy with the bad hair with the disorganized papers trying to warn people of impending disaster.
It's like this shit happens to you constantly. Why are you always like, no? And like at this point, it's not even like big monsters or anything. Sometimes it's just literally a fucking person. I saw a person and they're like, I doubt it. We're back on Earth somewhere and there's probably people, but I doubt you saw a person.
Yeah, I feel like at least Polly's companions on the TARDIS should say, yeah, this sounds pretty iffy, but that kind of doesn't happen here. Hobson says, oh, it's just your nerves, you crazy daft old bitch. He doesn't say that, but he may as well have done. He's not a kind person. And he goes to Dr. Evans' bed, the body's gone, and then Dr. Evans accuses the doctor Hobson accuses the doctor of playing a joke, and the doctor's like, no.
And this is a point where he's like, I'm gonna do something with you, doctor. And then, like, somebody else is like, hey, somebody else passed out. And he's like, oh, well, I'm distracted.
And if they can't find Evan's body, they're going to kick the doctor out of the base. Which seems kind of dumb if you think he's the guy who took the body. Telling him to just leave when he could have the body. That just seems like poor planning. Like, actively arrest the man. Arrest him if you think he stole the body. But don't say, well, bye. That doesn't solve the problem, because if he has the body, he's going to take it with him.
Or not tell you where it is, and then there'll be a stench after a while.
And then you'll find it, so it's all good. But anyway, the doctor goes off to do, I don't know, whatever. Polly goes off to get Jamie some water, and Jamie's left alone, and that's when we see our first Cyberman of the episode.
And they look so much better than they did in the Tube Sock 10th Planet.
I kind of like the Tube Sock.
I miss
though.
The Tube Sock.
I don't. I mean, these aren't my favorite. My favorite design of the Cybermen is the Invasion Cybermen, which you will eventually get to. The Cybermen here, I think, are a huge improvement over the wearing two air conditioners and a tube sock and a mining helmet iteration from the 10th Planet.
I don't miss the actual, like, giant film light yeah. attached to their chest.
That's slightly silly, yeah.
I do miss the voice, though.
Yeah, it's much more, it's computerized here.
It's actually a little harder to understand, I feel like.
A little more grating.
It's also interesting because the last Cyberman story was literally four stories prior to this one. Like, we had the 10th Planet, and then Power of the Daleks, Highlanders, Underwater Menace, and then here are the Cybermen again, which is kind of cool. But I mean, I'm complaining about a season that both opens and closes with a Dalek story, so what do I know?
I mean, we're not that far from another Cyberman serial, I feel like, right? The Tomb of the Cybermen's not that far off.
Yeah, you get 10th Planet, then you get three stories, then the Moon Base, then three stories, then Tomb of the Cybermen, and then there's like eight full stories before we get Cybermen again in the Invasion during season 6.
Man, they really like the Cybermen during this period of time.
And here's the thing, with the exception of Tomb of the Cybermen, literally everyone, well, I can't say literally, when I'm just including the exception and then said literally, that's dumb. But with the exception of Tomb of the Cybermen, every time the Cybermen appear during the Troughton era, they have a different look. Something for you to look out for, fact fans. If you're playing Watch Along with Watchathon of Rassilon, something for you to watch along with Watchathon of Rassilon along with.
I followed that.
That should be a slogan. Put that on your business cards.
Jamie sees the Cybermen and is convinced, like, that it's the Piper.
And he's like, you won't get me. You won't get me.
Ha! Jamie's very cute in this episode.
And that's the end of episode 1, The Curse of the Black Nerves. And we're now on to episode 2, The Call of the Phantom Piper.
Okay.
All right.
That's fine.
Even better. Scotland. Highlands. What are the Highlands? They're hilly. Therefore, episode 2, Hilly Piper.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. Episode 2, the one where Jamie hallucinates. Let's just give them all Friends episode titles. Oh, no, the one where Hobson gives the Doctor 24 hours to sort out the situation or else he is to leave the moon base.
Or don't, whatever, I don't care.
the Cyberman that's there isn't really there for Jamie. He's just there to, like, help himself to a body.
This episode exists, by the way.
Yeah, this one was real.
This one was real?
Yeah, I didn't dream this one.
They're all real, Ben. They're all real. If you believe hard enough.
So,
what is this, Hook? I close my eyes and imagine the food?
Exactly. And then you won't starve.
I think that's how that works. I'm pretty confident those kids were dying of malnutrition in that movie. Because they're just, like, eat this food, there's nothing here. Oh, it's imaginary. Oh, wow, you kids are dying. This is a problem. It's not just that you're malnourished, like, you're hallucinating.
That's why they didn't grow any.
It's the whimsy of a child's imagination. Like, no, it's not the whimsy of a child's imagination. Your brain is atrophying. Like, how is no one concerned about this? And then Rufio dies. Like, that whole movie, now I've turned this into the Hook cast, that whole movie is a tragedy. Those poor children. Those poor children. I may have to watch that movie later.
Yeah, Bangarang.
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 Hook 2, Electric Bangarang. Okay, so...
There's,
Polly,
yes.
Again, just sort of sees the Cybermen as he exits and screams. So the Doctor and everybody else comes back. Polly's like, hey, I saw Cyberman.
Like, no, you didn't.
And Calvin and Hobson says, no. Yeah, Hobson's very dismissive without evidence, because she's a woman. And in this enlightened age of 2070...
And she's like, I think it was a Cyberman. It looked kind of different, but I'm pretty sure it's a Cyberman. And, like, Hobson's like, nah, it's not a Cyberman, because, like, they've been gone since that last serial.
He says something like, every child on Earth knows about the Cybermen, with the exception of, I guess, like, Adelaide Brooke from The Waters of Mars, who never mentions her in, like, the Cybermen at all, or any other character from this time period in any other serial.
Continuity's hard, you guys.
This is a 53-year-old show about a time-traveling alien, and we're complaining that it's not internally consistent.
Because, like, what one was that? That one was, what, 84?
Yeah, the first, it was 1980-something when The Tenth Planet takes place. I feel like it was 80, I want to say 86, but that, maybe I'm just leaning towards X, it's the year I was born.
Question. Do we get any explanation for why there are Cybermen still around? Because as far as I know, they were, like, tied up with Mondas, and Mondas exploded, and then they died.
Mondas, like, straight up exploded. I feel like that is addressed, if not in this story, then elsewhere. And if it's not addressed in the show, you know it's addressed in the expanded universe of novels, comic books, and unique audio adventures. Fucked that up at the end a little bit there by not being able to articulate my words, but I think I got my point across. Bye now. Subscribers get more at bigfinish.com.
Yeah, so I don't think it's explained in this episode. Like, but they they're very specifically like, yeah, they're gone. They're all gone since that last one.
But Polly's like, it looks slightly different, almost as though we've got a slightly higher production budget this year. And everyone's like, no, that's ridiculous. They never give us any money. We're filming in a broom closet. Despite not believing her, Hobson's like, yeah, we'll send some guards out, though, just in case.
Speaking of budget, the first, like, three episodes they filmed in one location. The fourth episode, they had to move everything to a different set. And it's ever so slightly smaller.
Really?
The set gets smaller in the last episode.
It shrinks.
Yeah, I think it's to do with all that gravity. Just pulling stuff in, you know?
It's like the 10th Doctor's TARDIS in Day of the Doctor. It's like, is this smaller? Don't worry about it. Don't think about that. Don't pay attention to that.
Where are we at, though, in this episode?
Guards were sent just to see if there are any Cybermen. Which is like, there's nowhere for them to be.
And they're like, where are all the damn bodies? There should be bodies. There's so many dead people, no bodies.
I think this is one of the times where Hobson's like, hey, shit started getting fucked up when you guys showed up. What's up with that? And Ben's like, well, we can go. I'd be fine if we were to just get on the TARDIS and leave.
And that's when, like, the Doctor's like, no, we have to help. It is our solemn duty.
This is the episode. The Doctor has that wonderful speech about there are things in the universe that are work against our very way of life. They must be fought. And it's like, this is a wonderful little, like, it sums up who the Doctor is, but more than that, it sums up who the second Doctor is, I feel, because the first Doctor, particularly at the beginning, didn't really have that urge to help. Urge to kill, maybe. Urge to help, not so much. But this kind of really establishes, look, the second Doctor is a man, he cares about the people and the places he goes, and he wants to help. He's an idiot with a box and a screwdriver, passing by, helping out, learning, which might actually be the 12th Doctor. But point still stands.
No, I think it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, that was all on point, except for the screwdriver.
Yeah, he doesn't have that yet, but he will.
He hasn't done a lot of sonic things, like using the recorder to unlock unlock a cell.
Power of the Daleks, yes, that would be. And also, have to correct some misinformation there. The Second Doctor will use a sonic screwdriver, but not yet. In fact, I think the Second Doctor is the only Doctor to use the sonic screwdriver as a screwdriver.
Ooh.
Yes. Oh, yes. Anyway, where were we?
God, I don't know.
Bubble wrap hats.
That's spacey as hell right now.
Well, it's good. It's a podcast about space. Oh, okay. So,
space. Space.
Kevin Spacey.
Hobbins is mad at...
He's hopping mad.
He gives the Doctor 24 hours. He's right. Like, either fix everything that's going on or leave. You have a day.
If you don't fix everything that's wrong all over the place, you'll have to go. You mean like I would do anyway? Yes. Oh, well, as punishments go, gonna have to say, bit crap. I'm, of course, quoting directly from dialogue from the episode. Yeah, the Second Doctor had a potty mouth. Like, he had just filthy, filthy swore all over the place all the time.
Hobson's not very concerned.
I know.
Or, like you said, just easily distracted. Like, either fix everything or...
Whatever.
Either fix everything or don't. Seems to be the ultimatum, which, as ultimatums go, not very ulti. It's just a matum.
Which is, we get
I love
an
a good matum sandwich.
I don't like tomatoes.
We get an exchange that I really enjoy, where Polly's like, are you even a medical doctor? And he's like, I think I have at least one medical degree. He's like, yeah, I earned it in the 1800s.
Yeah, it was Joseph Lister.
And Polly's like, are you sure that's fine?
I'm just gonna stick needles in people, it's alright.
Pass me that bag of leeches, child.
I feel like maybe things have changed since then.
That's kind of like deciding, I'm gonna visit Romania, I'll read a guidebook. What was this, first edition, published 1982? I'm sure it's fine. Why is this building torn down? This book says it should be here 30 years ago.
Oh my god, that is 30 years ago.
We're all old, we're all old. I turned 30 3 weeks ago now, Christ. And I'm digging being 30. I'm having a whale of a time being 30. I'm sleeping more, I'm masturbating, which is just top notch. And just generally, I feel like I'm dying. But it's nice to feel it, you know? It's nice to feel something.
Oh, we're laughing because it's true.
Hey guys, 30 is the new 21, in that when you're 21 you do stupid shit and then you kill yourself.
So,
Doctor Who? back to our fun podcast.
We're all having a good time.
Well, I'll be dead soon, but let's have some fun while it lasts.
Yeah, let's see if we can watch the remaining 49 years worth of Doctor Who before we shuffle off this mortal coil. So we're back in the control room and Hobson has noticed that the Gravitron is becoming faulty and it's stopping them from being able to control the hurricane on Earth. Specifically, you know that one that's heading towards Hawaii? Yeah, that one.
We can't do anything about that.
And the commander of space control says, hey, you really need to, like, get on top of this hurricane because we're getting a little bit worried. and Hobson's like, no, I got it. It's fine. He does some tests.
And I was about to say, while the Doctor starts, like, sneakily trying to take samples, but not that sneakily.
This is one of the best scenes. He's crawling down around people's feet. And
taking
it's like...
their shoestrings?
Yeah.
He's like, he's like Dennis the Menacing around the whole place.
It puts me in mind of my first girlfriend. We come back from, like, a work Christmas do, and she'd had a few drinks. And we get in through the door, and it's like 1 a.m, and I said, it's late, our neighbors are asleep, let's keep our volume down, okay? We get like 3 or 4 steps up the stairs, and she says, are you proud of me? I'm being quiet!
That's me. I'm the same kind of drunk.
So the Doctor's stealing shoelaces, as a Doctor is wont to do.
He is very fond of stealing clothes.
Okay, the wiki says, they begin to get frustrated as they find nothing wrong. But this doesn't specify whether it's the Doctor or Hobson who's frustrated or both. I can't remember what happens in this part of the episode because I did start to fall asleep.
I want to say that it's Hobson and the crew who are testing the...
They're both frustrated.
Right, but I think
the Doctor's less frustrated.
Yeah, I think it's specifically about the people testing the equipment. Because I know there's like a whole scene where they're like, alright, we'll try this and try that.
I also want to mention about the Gravitron. There's like the control room where you put on a bubble wrap.
A bubble wrap hat? In order to control it?
And it's fantastic. It's a fantastic bowler
hat. One guy
puts
it on backwards.
Yeah, Tony said he put it on backwards. Like, how can you tell? And I'm like, all right, whatever. And then I was reading the TARDIS Wikia, and it's like, the guy put it on backwards. And then later he puts it's turned around right way.
Because it's shaped a very particular way, and the way he wears it is wrong.
So if you put it on backwards and you're like, gravity make things go down, it makes things go up.
No.
Or instead of affecting gravity, it affects, like, schmavity. No. So we go back to sick bay. Ben steps out to get some more supplies, leaving Polly on her own with Jamie. And this seems to be the theme, is when Polly is on her own, the Cybermen go, no, we're cool, we can just lurk around because no one believes this chick when she says she saw Cyberman. So that's when the Cyberman comes up, sneaks up to Jamie and Polly, and is like, ha-cha! The Cyberman goes to take Jamie, then has a sudden inexplicable change of heart, and is like, nah, this one's not done yet, and goes to take another body.
Like, he's advancing on Jamie and, like, gets right up there and is like, no, never mind.
This scene keeps happening.
I feel like we've done this before.
Groundhog Day at the moon base.
That's when we find out that there is a hole in the food bay, which is where Ben was
right earlier.
And so that's how the Cybermen are.
They've got
around.
A stack of like, bags in front of the
in
hole.
In front of it.
To keep the air in.
But we'll do what BP did with that oil leak a few years ago, and we'll just stuff it with, like, old newspapers and, like, bricks and so on, and that will solve the problem.
And this explains something they've mentioned a couple of times offhandedly previously, is that the air pressure keeps, like, fluctuating.
Yeah.
Like, it'll go down for a second and then come back up. And they're like, what's that about? I'm like, I don't care.
What if we died? Oh, no, we're not going to die. Okay, cool.
We're all going to die probably weird plague anyway, so.
Back in the control room, an engineer discovers that one of the antenna the Gravitron, is basically janked out the wazoo, which is a technical term meaning broken. And Hobson says, hey, when did that happen? And the engineer's like, about the same time the doctor got here. That makes him more convinced that the doctor is responsible and is about to go, right, I'm going to kick you off this base so you have no responsibility and are not, you know, held accountable for your actions.
And can go mess with more of our equipment out there.
Which, I have to say, in terms of incompetent people who have been put in charge of incredibly expensive and important military bases, I think Hobson might be the worst example of a leader in the entire run of Doctor Who, from 1963 to the present day. He's just, his punishment is piss off. Like, that's the whole thing. It's just leave.
Just stop being here.
Stop it. Go away. It's like he's trying to shoo out a raccoon that's got into his kitchen. Like, come on, get out. Come on. He's got a broom.
So two crew members go to fix the antenna.
And that's where we get a good look at their spacesuits.
Oh yeah, their spacesuits are great.
While they're doing that, the Doctor and Polly are talking, and the Doctor's basically tested everything he can think of to test on the base and hasn't really found anything.
He's examining the shoe.
Hobson comes in to confront him and tell him to get out, I guess. He's not going to do anything really useful. And the Doctor just kind of ignores him.
And he's like, I totally found something, but I need my, you know.
I need time. And so Hobson's like, oh, okay.
What is Hobson's deal? I don't get it. I don't get how he got this job. Why is he here? What is he doing? His entire purpose in the plot seems to be, I'm annoyed with you. Get out. No, I don't want to get out. Okay. I'll yell at you again in about 4 minutes.
He doesn't even really yell that much. He's very kind of, like, laid back about it
all. Yeah.
He's like, oh, you.
Are you touching my stuff? Told you not to touch my stuff.
I'm very tired.
Now you're in here touching my stuff.
Polly does what she did in the 10th planet, which is make coffee.
Oh, and the Doctor tells her to make coffee. So why don't you make the guys coffee so that they're less nervous? And that was the moment when I thought, this was made in the 60s.
Two that it's the second time that she's done it.
It must be a Kit Peddler thing, because it was in the last Cyberman.
Yeah.
Kit Peddler, coffee addict.
I don't know what to make this female character do. Oh, I know. I'll have her go make coffee.
Joe Grant makes a lot of coffee in the third Doctor's era. Again, I feel like I had a lapse in consciousness, because I'm pretty sure there was a point where suddenly the Doctor's like, it's in the sugar, the virus is in the sugar. But I don't feel like he reached that conclusion through anything other than it's just in the sugar. It just makes sense. That's why some people got sick and others didn't, because not everyone takes sugar with their coffee.
Well, yeah, because they're drinking the coffee, and one person who drinks
one
it
person
with
who
sugar
was drinking the coffee with sugar gets the virus. I think that's
Because it, yeah, like, someone else gets veiny.
Hobson is there, and he's drinking coffee, and the doctor, like, knocks it from his hand.
And he's like, it's too hot!
That's mine. It's tea.
And while this is happening, out on the surface, the two guys checking out the antenna, the two guys in the spacesuit get attacked by the Cybermen.
I love the way you say Cyberman like it's a person's last name. Hi, I'm Greg Cyberman.
I don't know. It's kind of like the way that Jeff on Community says Starburns. He doesn't say Starburns. He says Starburns.
There's Klingons on the starboard bell, starboard bell, starboard bell.
On the starboard bow. Scrape them off, Jim.
Okay, different show.
That's coming up, you guys.
So Hobson's like, hey, so if the sugar is like all kinds of like poisoned, how did that happen? And the doctor's like, well, clearly it was the Cybermen. And Hobson says that, oh, we've kind of looked for them. We didn't find any. So the doctor says, and it's a tone which is described on the wiki as conspiratorially. The doctor says, did you check the sick bay? And Hobson's like, well, I didn't see the point because there's always someone there. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is when they go to the sick bay and discover a Cyberman on one of the beds, covered by sheets. Polly goes, ah, as the Cyberman gets up.
It was very like, if they all had two heads, why do these statues only have one?
Right, but less effective.
Yeah.
Because like, that made me genuinely angry with myself. Why do all the statues only have, why didn't I realize that? That was so obvious. What's wrong with me?
This is, the characters are stupid, but it's a contrivance. That, in the Time of Angels, is the characters are being stupid, but we're stupid too. It's a legitimate, it's like, we should have seen this. I feel like there's someone who was watching the episode going, the doctor says that they have two heads, but the statues don't. That's kind of weird. And then there's no further thought. And then, oh no. But that's not going to happen in this, because it's going to be like, what? That's the dumbest reason not to check the sick bay ever. And they get a Cyberman for their troubles.
This is sort of a side story, but we were watching Elementary, and there was this episode where someone like gave a description of the bad guy, and there was a police sketch artist thing of it, and they kept showing it around, and like someone's like, that looks familiar, and I was like, it's Torgo from Manos Hands of Fates. And like, the dude had a poster of it in his room, and I'm like, that is Torgo. The whole episode I just keep going, it's Torgo, and then they're like, show the picture finally to someone who's like, yeah, that's the guy, and they're like, you're lying because this is fucking Torgo, and it's like, yes.
It was weird watching it with that knowledge, being like, how long is it going to take for them to acknowledge this?
Part of me is like, are they just going to get some guy that looks like Torgo?
And the answer is no. Episode 3.
Which is titled?
The Cyber Patient.
Are these getting worse?
Yes.
No, that would be possible. That's kind of impressive in a way.
No, my title is Take These Thrills and See Me in the Morning.
You.
But you laughed. I got a laugh. As a comedian, that's literally all I need. That and money.
I don't have one for the fourth episode, so.
I've got it covered.
All right, good.
We should just start calling
play
Ben
on the English
when
patient.
We do the titles.
Yeah.
And just have Ben do them every episode.
I'll do that. Why not? Bob, crew member Bob, who not to be confused with Angel Bob from The Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone, is killed when he tries to attack one of the Cybermen. The new Cyberman contacts the... Does he teleport or does he communicate with the ship?
He talks, I think. This is the first time we hear it talk, too.
And, yeah, he says that the men have gone missing. They're not dead. We've turned them into Cybermen. It's fine. They left Jamie because his head was damaged in the fall, which means there's no point in converting him to a Cyberman. So that's dumb.
I thought it was because he hasn't been exposed to the neuro... stuff.
No, because they say he's got something wrong with him that's not the nerve stuff, and they're like, eh, yeah, we don't.
Oh, okay.
We don't want him. Yeah. Eh. Eh.
So the Cybermen tell Hobson to go back to the control room, and they tell Ben. I'm too far away from the microphone. The Cybermen order Hobson to
That was very sexy.
Hello. The Cybermen order Hobson to take them to the control room and tell Ben and Polly to remain in the sick bay.
Tony is fanning herself.
Anyway.
It's time for some sexy Cyberman in this week's episode, The Moon Base.
Time to cyber.
In mono, as in one speaker, not the kissing disease. Although, if you kissed a Cyberman and you don't wipe down its mouthpiece first, you might catch something unpleasant.
I love having you on the show.
I love being on this show. It's too much fun. It's too much fun.
Oh, yeah, we should
we
cut it out.
We need to stop.
We should just deadly serious from here on out.
Graham Chapman's about to barge in a military uniform to accuse us of being too silly.
Every time this happens, I have no idea where we are.
We're the cyber ship is where the Cybermen are converting people into Cybermen. Now, this is the first time we see Cybermen converting people into Cybermen as well. We don't see that in the 10th Planet, to the best of my recollection. It's like with the Borg in Star Trek The Next Generation. The first time we see the Borg, they're not assimilating. It's not until Best of Both Worlds Part 1 that they then become assimilators. So it's yet another mirroring of the two. Obviously, the Cybermen came first by about 2.5 decades, but the Borg, much like the Cybermen, have a catchphrase, which is, you will be assimilated, which we don't hear. Do we hear that in this story? I can't even remember.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. But it will come up. But yeah, this is the second Cyberman appearance, but the first time we see them actively converting others to Cybermen. Which actually doesn't happen that much in the classic series, not to spoil it for you, but...
Really?
And they're not even, like, fully, like, converted into, like, full Cybermen, either. They're sort of just given, like, a little headband and, like, under their control.
Right. The control room sends another... Or they try to get a hold of the guy they sent out to check the antenna. Is that...
Yeah, and they're like, oh, it's dead. They're dead.
The Cybermen kind of outline their entire plan, which is, yeah, so we're going to take over the Gravitron and we're just going to destroy the Earth. We're just going to do it.
Because you are a danger.
Mostly because we don't like the Earth.
And then they're like, if you say you don't have feelings, but, like, this seems like a pretty, like, revenge-type feeling you got going on here because we... destroyed Mondas, and they're like, no, we don't really care about revenge, we just think you're dangerous. It's nothing personal.
It's just that you're dumb. And they also say, hey, heads up, just FYI, we gained access to your base underground. We just did it.
We're just telling you everything, because it's a little update.
Just giving you all the information, because we're going to win, because it's the 60s and villains don't have nuance.
I think this is the point where Jamie starts to wake up and be conscious again, right?
And feel better.
Yeah. And starts to...
Part of it, why he's so sick and out of it for most of the thing, is because he wasn't in this episode originally. Because Kit Peller wrote it without knowing that Jamie was going to be in the show. And so he's like, ah, oh, he's sick. And then they gave him, like, some of Ben's lines for, like, episode 3 and 4.
So, yeah, he wakes up and they're trying to figure out what to do, basically. This is my favorite thing. But, like, we need to figure out what their weakness is. And Ben talks about... how it was radiation.
Radiation. Like, I was like, that's not just the Cybermen.
That's also
weakness.
My weakness.
Their weakness is bullets.
It's like, you can kill a werewolf with a silver bullet. You can kill a person with a silver bullet. You can kill a human. You can kill a human and a vampire with a steak. You can use the same steak, even. You don't even have to wash it.
And then Jamie suggests that they use holy water.
And they're like, oh, Jamie. But then, like, Jamie? They're like, oh, Jamie, you may be onto something.
Oh, Jamie.
And so Polly takes this idea and is like, hey,
what are they made out of?
Nail polish remover dissolves plastic, right?
Yeah, we'll just dump them in nail polish remover. We'll remove the Cybermen with nail polish remover.
It's cleaning fluid, basically. It's a mixture of different solvents.
Well, literally, they're like, hey, here's one solvent might work, but we don't know for sure. What if we mix all of the solvents we have together into one solvent?
Kids at home, do this.
it's like Bender on All My Circuits. Like, try this, kids at home. It's great. It's like, I'm sure none of these are volatile or will have, like, weird reactions to each other. Brilliant. Perfect. Spray them. I also like that this is referenced, by the way, in Nightmare and Silver in Matt Smith's last season.
They then proceed to put that mixture in a plastic spray bottle so that they can spray it on things to melt plastic.
I'm guessing because they couldn't find a super soaker.
Why doesn't it destroy the plastic bottle?
That's a good question.
No one knows.
I mean, I guess it could be a glass spray bottle, maybe?
I don't know. It was animated, so who knows?
It was also the 60s, so it could be a glass spray bottle. But then the nozzle would still melt because that would still be plastic. It's like a triple fried egg sandwich with chili sauce and chutney. You've got to eat it before the bread dissolves, he said, directly quoting Red Dwarf.
This is when the terrible thing happens, by the way.
It's, yeah.
So Polly comes up with this plan. It's her plan. She's the one who came up with this idea. And she's like, all right.
At this point, I am starting to be like, Ben's okay. He's not that bad.
Maybe I was wrong about him after all.
Ben Jackson and the Jackson 5.
As opposed to Ben Folds and the Ben Folds 5. Works on, like, three levels, that joke. It's brilliant.
I was happy to be a part of it.
So Polly's like, all right, let's go. Let's take down the Cybermen. Ben's like, no, Polly.
This is men's work.
This is work for the men. It was Polly's fucking plan! She came up with the idea!
She's the one who mixed all the shit together.
In the plastic bottle.
She made her Polly Toff cocktail.
She... awful. You know what? I'm not even going to say the joke I was going to say. Because, and not because your joke was so good, but because it's so bad, I don't want my joke associated with yours.
That's from the episode.
I don't care.
Ben says it.
He doesn't say Polytov. I said Polytov.
I thought Ben said it.
No, he said Molotov cocktail, I think.
I swear, yeah. I thought that happened in the episode.
Because it's so good, right?
No, that's not.
And
why.
You just assumed it was part of the episode when really I came up with it. Well, Polly came up with
it. I swear.
The joke was so good it resonated back through time into Kit Peddler's writing office.
Polytov cocktail. So what was your joke, though? What was your joke?
Oh, I was going to say, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I can't.
Dance, monkey!
I've forgotten the joke. It's gone now. Wait, no. Oh, no. She pulled the joke out of her pocket. It's her pocket plan. It's the Polly Pocket. No. Awful.
Man, I had Polly Pocket.
But that would have then allowed me to segue into referring to the cocktail as a mighty mix.
I fucked it all up with Polly Top cocktail, which is clearly deserved.
Actually, your joke was better than mine. It's fine. It's all right. You know what? I'll just sit and listen. So how far in are we? Where were we?
Ben's being an ass and Polly's basically like...
That's every episode. Narrow it down.
But Polly's like, I'm coming with you. Shut up. And then they do. They both go.
And then they go and they spray the Cybermen and they melt. And then they free the people from their nerve helmets.
Yes.
Their little nerve bands, their headbands.
And it's interesting because this is another instance, by the way, of sound. The Cybermen, they have the sonic control.
Because what does he do? He's like, he's playing some sort of sound so that it's interference, and that's how he realizes that it's sonic control. So when there's some sort of sound playing, like, the signal's disrupted. And then they take the guys to the sick bay and then leave the mind control headbands right next to them.
On top of them.
On top of them.
Like, in the bed with them.
Which is what you want to do.
So, back on the moon base, there's a member of the crew named Benoit, which is a great name. Sturdy name. He's a wrestler. Chris Benoit.
So we've got Ben Patton, Ben Jackson, and Benoit.
Who does not have a character sheet. Actually, you know what? Now I want to see if he has a character sheet. Suddenly and inexplicably, it's important that I know this. Hobson has a character sheet. He does. Awareness 3, coordination 3, ingenuity 3, presence 5, resolve 4, strength 3. I feel like he's got too much ingenuity.
His presence is 5? He's the most distracted guy I know.
I'm just going by what the source book says. Traits, voice of authority? What? Hobson is the controller of the moon base and gets a +2 on presence and confidence rolls to influence others or gain their trust. But he's such a wet blanket and he's such a pushover. Good grief. All of the other moon base crew, by the way, have similar stats. Awareness 3, coordination 3, ingenuity 4, presence 3, resolve 4, strength 2. There's another trait that they get when they're hypnotized. It doesn't say what that is.
This has been Ben Reading Numbers.
Ben Reading Numbers! Ben Reading Numbers! Where's that guitar riff when I want it, you know? You never give me a riff.
Bring, bring, bring.
That's a harp.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Know what that was.
I'm glad that I looked this up because it was the most pointless thing I've ever done on this podcast.
And you've done a lot of pointless things.
I was going to say, which is impressive.
I just wanted to know if Benoit had a character sheet. Hobson does, and it's hilariously inaccurate. Benoit says, let's go look for the engineers. Hobson says, yeah, sure, but they need to be observed by another member of the crew. Benoit finds suits, contacts the moon base, and as he does, he hears his crewmate warning him of the Cyberman. Benoit doesn't see a Cyberman, so he's fine. And then it's like immediately behind him.
Gun to the face.
It's like a Scooby-Doo cartoon where he just turns around and it's there.
There's so many guns in Scooby-Doo.
Of course, it's a very violent program, lots of blood. Because they always pull the monster's head off at the end of the episode.
Just peel the skin right off their face, really. Not even the whole head, just the skin off their face.
It's horrifying. Sorry, I'm talking over Tony, which is my right as a man, but
Tommy, why don't you go make us some coffee?
I'm sorry. That's the worst. That is the worst thing I've ever said. But we are talking about a show from the 60s, so I feel like I get a free pass. Just one free pass, and that's it. Wait till we hit the 70s.
So, anyway. The Cyberman tries to shoot the gun, and then everyone realizes that we're on the moon. So, the gun does nothing. Because they're on the moon.
And he's like, ha, it doesn't work. And then the Cyberman hits him in the face. That's what I would do.
Benoit says, so long, suckers. And his legs pinwheel in the air for like 2 seconds, making noises. And then goes, pchoo. And then the Cyberman runs after him. But Benoit is... he's knackered, which is a fancy English word for tired, and he's not going to make it to the base. But then Ben emerges from the airlock and throws a flask of that, the Polytov cocktail at the Cyberman. That joke's sticking. I'm sticking with it. It's good gag, good goof.
I want to mention that scene, because that scene where he's running from the Cyberman and Ben is coming out. They did a nice, like, there would be music over the scene where the Cyberman and Benoit are running and stuff. And then when it cut to Ben, he would be, like, working his way out of the base, like, putting on the suit and all that stuff, and there'd be no music. And it was like, it kept cutting back and forth between music and no music and an interesting editing style.
It's like that moment in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Was it Sir Lancelot is running towards the building and you hear the drums and then it cuts to the guards and there's nothing but ambient sound and it keeps cutting back to the running and then cutting back. Yeah, it was that, basically.
Except this felt like not comedy.
I feel like I want to take that scene and dub in like the theme from Sanford and Son while Ben's putting the suit on, or just replace the music from the chase with Yakety Sax.
Do it. That is your mission now.
Maybe I will. Something for your Patreon backers.
So on the moon base, they're getting ready to fight more Cybermen. I guess they've found the cyber ship. They go to look at it. I guess like I've got a telescope, and they see just an army of Cybermen marching towards them.
A full-on brigade.
It's time for war.
Yeah, and that's what they sound like. Yeah, that's the cliffhanger, is, oh no, a lot of Cybermen. And it's animated as well, so it looks really kind of not terrible. Except, no, they kind of lurch on the animation, as I recall. I say as I recall, as if I'm not watching it right now.
Well, I think some of it is rotoscoped of a scene from episode 4. Because you can definitely see in like episode 4, like, oh, that's the shot they used in that animation.
I like that they resisted the temptation to make the Cybermen look more mechanical in the reconstructions, by the way. I like that they were, look, it's people in dumb suits.
Yeah, they left the little wiffle balls on and everything. Which, by the way, their tubes are connected to them by wiffle balls.
That's how that works. I'm sure they're not called wiffle balls in England, said the Englishman.
What would they call them over there?
Scoot spheres.
Is this our first faux fact?
Alright, I forgot about Ben's faux fact.
I'm not telling you whether I've given you any faux facts or not, because it's too much fun.
Scoot spheres. I like scoot spheres.
Guys, I think we found our first Watchathon of Rassilon t-shirt.
So we're now into episode 4. Too many Cybermen.
I was thinking A New Hope, actually. That felt appropriate.
Not even trying anymore. You've just given up.
The episode where it all
now
gets fixed.
Now it's time
fixed.
For episode 4. The fourth one.
Now it's time for episode 4. Oh no! Cybermen all over the place. On the moon. It's a base on the moon where the Cybermen are, and there's lots of them, and they're all marching towards the moon. What are we going to do? What is the Doctor going to do in this particular moment of peril? Is he actually called Doctor Who? I don't know. It hasn't really been firmly established, and they're not really going into any further detail. Although Wotan did call him Doctor Who in the War Games. The War Machine, sorry. War Games is a completely different story. I'm sorry. I'm getting confused. I'm running out of space on the page to write this title. But I really think it's important that we met...
The Cybermen contact the moon base and basically like, hey, we have you surrounded, just let us do what we want to do,
deal with it.
Hobson's like, nope, absolutely not. We already sealed up the one hole you came in. We're not really worried about it, since, you know, you told us about it.
Yeah, the Cybermen don't really think things through. In either of the stories they've appeared in so far, the Cybermen give away way too much information.
Do you think emotions help you, like, lie more efficiently?
I feel like, yeah, because you're worried you'll get caught. That's an emotion. Worry is an emotional state. So if you don't care what people think of you, you're less likely to lie.
And then they're like, well, if we learn anything from the 10th planet, it's that you basically just have to wait things out. And then we're just going to wait for the relief craft to show up. Because the Cybermen's cut off their communications with Earth. And like, once they don't hear us, they'll send up a ship because they'll either think we're dead or what.
They're like, yeah, the Cybermen are jamming the signal when Hobson tries to contact Earth. And the crew does the thing you just said. Like, they're like, that's fine, we'll just wait for the relief craft and we'll be donezo. We'll just clock out. You know, we're still getting paid, whatever. They don't actually have that conversation. But I think I would. Am I still being paid if the base is under siege.
Do you get paid when you go back to Earth, I guess? If you die, does all your money go to your relatives? I'm suddenly, like, really curious about what you get paid in space.
Space pay. Space bucks.
What if you're, like, in space for, like, years?
What if you die? Do you become a space ghost?
Coast to coast.
You took it too far.
You ruined it. Now we can't have anything nice.
What if you're, like, just planning on spending the rest of your life in space, but on a mission? Oh, while you're in space, do you just get your money sent to your family while you're still in space?
Just set up a joint bank account with whoever.
Do you just have, like vending machines in space with, like, candy bars, and you just get... They send you little coins that you can put into...
Why would it need to be in a vending machine?
They spend their money in it.
You know who you should ask? People who work on submarines. How do you get paid?
Ah, that's like the space of Earth.
God damn it.
Can I just point out, you did marry him. That was a choice that you made. You knew what you were getting into.
Space of Earth.
It does explain the hit television series Sequest DSV, which is Star Trek, but in the water!
Oh, because water is the space of Earth.
And much like space, we don't completely know what's going on in there. And also, there's a dolphin that can talk, and a weird man with face tattoos. That is the Watchathon of Sequest DSV. A-thon.
So there's a cyber ship, there's Cybermen, they're trying to get into the moon base. The base that's on the moon. Those are all things that are currently happening right now.
One of the Cybermen transmits to control those wacky helmets and wakes up Evans, who's in the moon base sick bay.
With the headpiece on his chest.
Just laying there, right there.
Because he's so smart. He knocks out a guard and leaves the sick bay, and then he manages to get into the control room. He just chills out. He just slips in. Just Scooby-Doo's his way in.
Because everybody's like watching the relief craft, the relief ship.
They know it's going to get there. Craft never boils. Everyone knows this. So yeah, he gets into the gravitron controls, basically knocks that one crew member unconscious and takes his place.
Puts the hat on backwards.
It looks so silly on backwards, that hat made out of bubble wrap.
Well, the cool kids wear their hats backwards.
Also their pants. The crew's too busy watching the relief craft approach, but then it turns and goes. It changes course, and they are gently baffled by the whole thing.
And it's because that guy with his backwards hat on is fucking shit up.
He's too cool for school, and the ship's like, man, we can't. He's too rad for us. Let's fly into the sun. So it flies into the sun. I do want to point out that this ship is going to fly into the sun.
And everyone's kind of like, oh, that's sad. That's kind of a bummer.
It's the biggest of bummers. But then the doctor says, you know what would have caused this? Is if someone were dicking around with the gravitron. His words, not mine. And that's when they see Evans is there, and he's the one who did the thing. So the doctor sends Jamie and Ben, like, the best companion and the worst. It's not chocolate and peanut butter, it's chocolate and yak dung, to go to the sick bay to make sure that no one else has kind of woken up. Jamie and Ben close up and guard the sick bay.
By shoving a chair into it, right?
But it proves to be the most ineffectual thing they could possibly have done, because literally as they've done it, everyone like wakes up and goes, oh yeah, we work for the Cybermen, and then just basically pushes their way out. This scene proves that Ben is useless even with the added bonus of Jamie helping out.
And to be fair, it's not Jamie's fault, because Jamie doesn't really know what's going on.
Yeah, he doesn't know what a chair is.
Yeah, it's a team up of useless and clueless.
He's just like, alright, I'm helping.
Yeah, keep in mind that in the original draft of this, Kit Pedler wouldn't have had Jamie there at all, so it would have just been Ben fucking it up. Jamie fucks up as a production necessity because he's present, not because he's useless. Although he's now, I guess canonically, that makes him a little useless. So we go back, and in the control room we have Hodor using the Tannoy to try to talk sense into Evans and be like, hey, stop that. And Evan's response is, nah, we're good. So they decide that really the only way to stop him is to rush him. But they're stopped by the Cybermen, who basically say that the moon base is now theirs. It's under their full control.
And they shoot a hole in the tent.
That seems like a bad idea. All the oxygen gets sucked out. Everyone begins to suffocate and die. And then Hobson and Hodor and Chris Benoit fix the hole with a coffee tray.
They just put a coffee tray up against the thing.
This cereal has so much solid science in it.
Like, it's not like that coffee tray would be crumpled up and pulled out through the hole.
This shit is as legit as The Martian.
Don't they try like a handful of things first, though? Don't they just like throw a jacket on it and it holds for like a little bit?
Peanut butter. No. Newspapers. We made a plug out of papier-mâché. Nope, just went straight through. Okay, damn. This feels like Jason X, this moment. Chris Benoit and Hodor fix it with a coffee tray. And the doctors notice that Evans has basically passed out and moves him away from the controls. Is the hat still on at this point? Does the Doctor take it off? I can't remember.
Yeah, the Doctor takes it off. I don't think he wears it, though. It's just kind of a bummer.
Hobson and the Doctor are shocked and dismayed to discover another cyber ship landing. A weapon is unloaded from it.
Like a big, like, sort of like thing. Grenade. Not like a big fucking... What are those things you put on your shoulder and it goes... Foof.
Bazooka, mortar, pazuki.
Yeah, they're like going to shoot a thing at it.
Oh, no, I want a pazuki. You guys have had a pazuki, right?
No, what's a pazuki?
They sell them at BJ's, and it's basically, it's a chocolate chip cookie that's cooked in the pan with ice cream and hot fudge on top of it.
Ah.
That sounds really good.
Doesn't it just? Next time you guys are in LA, I'll let you treat me to a pazuki.
We need to stop this podcast right now so we can go to LA. They have the weapon.
The
bazooka weapon.
Everyone's like, look out, he's got a shooter. And then they all leap for cover. But the Doctor's like, no, I'm invulnerable to bullets. He doesn't actually say that, but he just kind of stands there defiantly like a superhero.
Bullets are not one of my weaknesses.
But it turns out, like, the place has, like, a shield up, I guess.
I think the Doctor did it. The Doctor...
Because he was fiddling with shit.
Oh, initially, he didn't. Initially, it was the Gravitron deflects the laser. The gravitational force of the Graviton.
Why did it not stop that last bullet hole through the window?
Because that would require some kind of consistency in a story written by Kit Pedler. So, the Doctor has an idea, and he wants to know if the Gravitron the power can be reduced so that it can affect the surface of the moon? Is that right?
Yeah. He wants to use He's like, we need to lower it.
Lower the big, like, satellite dish thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, point at the moon. Chris Benoit and Hodor say, well, Hodor says Hodor, but Chris Benoit says, we've never done it before! So they get it there, they point it down.
They spend, like, 20 minutes trying to figure out how to do it, and he's like, we can't do it.
It won't go down far enough.
And then he's like, oh, the safety's on. If I just remove that, now we can do it. But they spend like...
There's a bolt there I gotta take out.
Right.
Delightfully stupid.
So that we won't do something like this.
They do the thing. The Cybermen and the ships get blasted off into space by the Gravitron.
All die.
They all just sort of float off into space.
Like the Borg in Star Trek First Contact. More parallels. Hobson turns around to say, Gadget, you've done it again! But then the Doctor and his companions are nowhere to be seen. They've gone.
They've stepped out and forgot that the gravity's all fucked up, and they also just float off into space.
The Doctor's like, oh shit, the TARDIS is on the moon. Shit!
What? Yeah, how come the TARDIS stayed on the moon?
Because they had to put the spacesuits on, so as they were getting ready to aim and fire the Gravitron, the Doctor's like, we're just going to pop out. I think you guys have got this. We're fine. It's good. You can figure it out from here. So the Doctor's just gone. They see the ship overhead, and the Doctor goes, you know what? I think I'm probably going to see the Cybermen again. They're pretty popular villains. We've had two stories with them so far. We can probably reuse these costumes. They won't reuse these costumes. And they get back into the TARDIS, and they go, I wonder what happens to the moon base. There's like this weird moment of like actually giving a shit about how the future pans out for the base that he's just saved. Well, not saved, because he left before this actual saving happened. But he has that rare moment of, how do things pan out for this base?
I can check.
So, yeah, you try to use the time-space visualizer to check it out.
And, like, Jamie's like, oh, I don't know about the second sight. That's a terrible impression. Sorry. But, yeah, he's, like, very worried about the second sight. It's dangerous.
That's something I respect. It's like, hey, when has, like, a prophecy or anything ever done anyone any good? All it's ever done is screw somebody over.
And the prophecy they saw was a giant claw. Which rhymes also, by the way. It was unintentional. But Polly's like, oh! They see a claw on the scanner, and that's the end of part 4. That's the end of the moon base.
We finished an episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, we did this, and we did it with your help.
Not really. We did it all on our own. You just sat there and listened.
For pennies a day. You can give us pennies a day. Okay, so...
Yeah, please, give us pennies. We have a Patreon.
Okay, I fell asleep during this episode, had to rewatch parts of it. In terms of the Troughton era Cyberman stories, I think this is, for me, the least interesting. There are three of them. There's this, Tomb of the Cybermen, and the Invasion. Unless I'm wrong, there may be more.
What about Power of the Daleks? Oh, wait, no. Wait, I'm thinking of the 10th. Oh, God, I'm stuck.
What about Power of the Daleks? That's my favorite Cyberman story.
I was thinking of the 10th Planet, and then I remembered that's the first Doctor.
I did forget about The Wheel in Space, which is a Cyberman story. So there's four. There's a Moonbase, Tomb of the Cybermen, Wheel in Space, and The Invasion. And for my money, The Invasion is my personal favorite. I really hope that you guys bring me back on for that one. I would say The Invasion, then Tomb of the Cybermen, and then Wheel in Space. Moonbase is my least favorite. There's not a lot happens, much like The 10th Planet. It feels like they just kind of wait stuff out. The climax at the end happens without... I mean, the Doctor has the idea, and they go, okay, let's do it. And then he's like, cool, peace out, y'alls. And then just leaves. I don't know. It makes more sense than the 10th Planet, but it just feels clunky.
The end.
I didn't like it. Sorry.
I had to be sexy.
I have to be sexy.
I did like it. I didn't like it as much as the 10th Planet, but I did think it was, it seemed like really similar to the 10th Planet. I mean, part of that's because, you know, it's the Cybermen again. There's that whole, you know, we come onto a base and there's all these characters that we, like so many characters that we don't really know or care about. And like, I feel like the Doctor and the companions get lost in the shuffle a little bit. Actually, I feel like not as bad in this story as they did in the 10th Planet. So I think like the Doctor and the Companions are a little bit better in this serial, but
they actually do stuff in this one.
But the fact that it is so similar, it's like The Hangover for me, because like The Hangover 2 I feel is a technically better film than The Hangover, but because it's so similar to the first one, it's not as good as the first one, if that makes sense. Like if you were like watching The Hangover 2 with no context of like the first movie, it's not a bad movie, but because it's so similar to the first movie, it's not as good. So like I feel like this one, this episode is probably a little technically better with the way they handle the companions and the Doctor, but because it is so similar, it feels like it's retreading on shit. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I like Jamie. I like Jamie a lot. I like Polly getting stuff to do and her polytop cocktail. I did not care for Ben talking about men's work. And Hobson is just thoroughly ineffectual. And the science in this episode is, oh, so wobbly. Mix all your solvents together. That's a great idea. Or, you know, plug up your space hole with a tray. It's a little wobbly. But yeah, the climax is the Doctor kills everybody and bolts. But it's not bad. It's just a little redundant, maybe. And the animation's good. But again, not as good as the 10th Planet. This is like the 10th Planet, but less so.
The 9th Planet, in which the planet is the moon.
Good things about the serial. Jamie gets sick.
What the fuck is wrong with nice. You?
Do you not like Jamie?
No, I like Jamie a lot.
She likes sick characters.
Yeah.
It makes her feel protective of them.
We don't have to talk about it. I mean, no, I know I brought it into up, this. But anyway.
Let's get into your deal, whole deal. Let's figure you out.
So, it is sad that he still doesn't get a lot to do. I'm still waiting for them to figure out his character, really. It's okay.
It's okay? That's the entire...
I had, like, points in my head. And now there's nothing. There's nothing there.
Oh, let's talk about what did you think about like the Cybermen design? Like, I think it was a little better in some respects and not so...
Oh, significantly better. Are you kidding me? It's not even up for debate.
The voice, though.
That's what I was going to say. I miss the voice.
The voice? That like whole like weird modulation, like up and down sing-songiness of it is gone.
In this one, it's straight up...
monotone.
It's not as fun.
But to be fair, it also doesn't sound as much like the Daleks.
It's fairly unremarkable, I'd say. Like, as always, there's a lot of really nice Doctor moments, because Chu's so fun.
Like him going around, like, fucking with the shoes and stuff.
Oh, that's something I wanted to say. Chu seems to be this weird mix of... He's simultaneously more empathetic with people. Like, he does want to help, and that is something... He's not just sort of like, hey, I just want to check this shit out for science. He's like, you know, we have a responsibility to be here and help. But he also seems more brutal, and like, we need to help, so... Probably gonna kill all these Cybermen.
Or like in the Underwater Menace when he basically drowns their entire fucking city.
Right. His solutions are a little bit extreme. So he seems simultaneously...
Like he wants to help, but his execution's a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, he's more empathetic, but also more ruthless. Anyway, those are my final thoughts.
Ben, how would you do this serial if it was modern him?
I don't know. The Cybermen, I feel, work best when you kind of play up their more zombie aspects. I think that's something that, as an example, Nightmare and Silver kind of got right, but not really. I still feel like the best modern day interpretation of the Cybermen was in Death in Heaven, Darkwater and Death in Heaven. I feel like that was kind of the story that worked for the Cybermen. This is the first time we see them turning other people into Cybermen or putting them under cyber control, which kind of plays up with the kind of mechanical zombie aspect of what the Cybermen are. So I would definitely lean more into that. I don't feel like this needs to, I feel like if this were a modern day story, it would be probably a standalone episode rather than like a two-parter. And that's really it. I feel like there's a lot of stuff in this narrative that needs to be streamlined and not boring. How about you guys? What would you do differently?
I'd probably play up the Phantom Piper thing a little bit more.
That's the thing I would strip out. That's like the first thing I would remove, is that kind of, oh, we've just decided that this is a part of this particular Scottish culture. No, it's not. Use actual Scottish culture if you're going to use it. Don't make up bullshit.
I probably would have played with the Gravitron a bit more.
I would have given it a better name, but...
Like, I would make it more of a, like, the Doctor would make a handheld Gravitron device. They'd have, like, an an Inception type, you know, hallway scene where he's fighting the Cybermen, but with like by fucking with the gravity, just like flinging him up to the ceiling and all that shit. That'd be fun. That's what I'd do. Anything you want to plug, sir?
No, my usual stuff. You can find me online at benpadden.net. I'm on Twitter at benpadden. I am on Tumblr, benpadden.tumblr.com. Facebook is facebook.com/benpadden. I'm on MySpace. No, I'm not. Jump Leads will be launching properly later this year, but I'll have more information about that. Maybe you guys can have me on closer to that point and we'll figure that out. But we've tweaked what we were going to do, and I think I was too ambitious and stupid and too stupid to know that I was too stupid. But I'm online. I do stuff. If you're in the Los Angeles area, keep an eye out because I do stand-up comedy. I do stand-up. I stand in front of an audience of people and try to make them laugh. And in exchange, maybe I get paid for that. No, I don't, because the LA comedy scene is horrible. That's it. That's me.
Nice. Go check him out.
Please, 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 please.
And if you want to check us out, we are on WatchYourAssLon.com. Follow our Twitter at WatchYourAss. If you want to help out the show, you can go to WatchYourAssLon.com/support, which has a link to our Patreon, which is Patreon.com/Watchathon. And there's all sorts of cool rewards where you can watch us watch the episode. And etc. etc. And we also on our support page we have an Amazon wish list where you can buy the DVDs for us and sponsor an episode, and we'll shout you out and put you on our Friends of Rasslon webpage and etc. etc. I'm just gonna say etc. etc. a lot. Rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Do it.
It helps a lot, even if you have bad things to say. Maybe.
Yeah, just
do
it.
You can say bad things. Just give us a 5-star review.
Yeah, just 5 stars. It sucked. But that Ben Patton guy, he's pretty cool.
And thank you very much for watching along with Rassing-a-thon. Lon. I was trying to come up with a good sign-off for you guys, and I think I nailed it.
Tony probably enjoys that more than Keep It Rassle Awesome.
Because you can't make Rassle Awesome a thing.
Too late. It's already a thing.
It's not a thing. It'll never be a thing.
Oh, no. Keep calm and wrestle on. Like, that's clearly the sign-off. Like, why has that even not even occurred to either of you?
Holy shit.
Fuck.
Yes. Sold. Next time we'll be back with The Macro Terror, which will have special guest Christopher LeBron Cherry.
Really? Yeah. I'm excited.
The basketball player?
His name's not really LeBron. I just say that.
We just decided his middle name's LeBron. We refuse to acknowledge anything else.
But we'll be back next time with The Macro Terror with Chris Cherry, and that's it. Keep calm and wrestle on.
It's you, the Phantom Piper.